Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ron Coomer, Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
Unbelievable.
1999 American League All-Star.
You might expect Wells to mix his pattern up. I mean, Coomer has owned David Wells.
This might work out.
The Coom Dog, every week with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's always a joy to talk to Ron Coomer. Ron, how are you?
Good morning, Ron. Good.
Mikey, David, how are you?
Oh, we are, you know, we're always warmed by the idea of spring training, even if it is allegedly snowing in
Arizona. It's snowing, Ron. It's snowing out there.
Hey, let me just tell you this. I am leaving Minneapolis. I've only been here, like, I don't know, maybe a week and a half all winter, and there's about 5 feet of snow. I'm looking out at the airport right now, so... It is snowing in Phoenix, but nothing like here, boys.
And I saw a thing online. Now, we had that polar vortex come through, and
I did
the boiling water and threw it out into the, you know. But I saw a thing yesterday of people making bubbles. This is in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, making bubbles, and they freeze, like, immediately. It looks like a Christmas ornament. That's how cold it is there.
It is. That is correct. And, that's why I try not to be here all that much, and I've spent a lot of time in Clearwater and in Chicago, which isn't much better, but it's a lot less snow.
So, Ron, let's get to the baseball. You're getting out there this weekend. The Cubs begin games tomorrow. Tyler Chatwood is pitching on Sunday, or he's scheduled to pitch. There aren't a lot of spots for people to make this team. I mean, there are a lot of guys who are penciled in, a lot of guys who are coming back. Where does Tyler Chatwood fit into the equation in your mind, and what can he do this spring to either – remove doubt or to remove himself from the equation?
Well, I definitely think there's a chance for him to make the team, and I mean a big one, because Cubs owe him a great deal of money still for the next 2 years. So, and he's got a proven track record of being pretty good in the big leagues, and he's got great stuff. I like listening to his comments about looking at a lot of video and being proactive and addressing his issue of not throwing strikes. David, I mean, at the end of the day, his mechanics were screwed up. He was thrown way across his body, and his body was flying forward and then or flying open, and then his arm couldn't catch up. And then he would try to make the adjustment from there, and it would be one would bounce, and the next one was way up high. Then it was, you know, if you were right-handed hitter, you always had to watch, you know, he was going to knock you down, and not on purpose, but that's just the way it was. So I saw a guy that was losing a lot of confidence and a major mechanical issue with every ball he threw. So to me, with him going back to the drawing board and trying to figure it out, a lot like hitters when they have a real bad season and, you know, the mechanics go south on them, he could be a guy that could be pivotal for the Cubs and be that in-between guy. He could be that sixth starter like Montgomery has been. He could also be a guy that's the 25th guy in the roster if he's doing the same thing, make the team, but not participate much unless it's a blowout like he did, you know, the last month and a half of the season. So there's a wide range of things. I think, in my heart of hearts, I believe a guy that's got that much time in the big leagues will figure it out and will be a quality pitcher for the Cubs.
Yeah, you know, I think that he said that he sees himself as a starter. I don't know what else he would see himself as, because if he's having control issues that prevent him from starting, then how can you use him out of the bullpen? It would, as you say, it's a long bullpen. You know, it's a really difficult role to find yourself with. But again, they've got a couple of guys. You know, Darvish kind of is a different category because of the injury, but by all accounts, he's out there. He's very optimistic. He has been improving quite a bit, and hopefully that ends up working out.
Yeah, it has to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and that's the reason why Tom has taken some heat, so it's the deal about being inactive in free agency this year is they pushed all the chips in last year, right? So when you push all your chips in on multi-year deals, those are your chips. So to me, Darvish has to work out, right? If the Cubs are going to be successful this year, he's got to work out. Excuse me. But I watched him throw the other day. I've watched a lot of film on him, of him throwing early in spring. And it really looks like the ball, you know, the old phrase, the ball's coming out of his hand well.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look tentative. And that, to me, is the biggest key. I'm looking at him throw, and I watched him play catch, and it looked fine last year. Then I watched him get on the mound, and all of a sudden he looked tentative. The other day when he threw batting practice, I got to see it all on video, and I didn't see one pitch that didn't look like he cut it loose.
Ron, offensively, probably the biggest change is Chili Davis being replaced by Anthony Iaposi as the hitting coach. And we learned sometimes today that the term situational hitting is not one that Iaposi necessarily embraces as much as opportunity hitting. When you go out to spring training, what will you be able to tell, if anything, from watching early on the approach these hitters take or the swings that maybe fundamentally change, if at all, mechanically? What will you be looking for and how will you be able to tell?
Well, to your point, just the key word was approach. I don't care what you call it, if it's opportunity hitting, if it's situational hitting. You know, those are just words or to describe what we're trying to get accomplished, right? What are you trying to get accomplished? You're trying to move runners along. You're trying to not punch out in key situations. So with certain hitters, with runners at third and less than two outs, and a big-time pitcher on the mound, you got to put the ball in play early in the count. I'm looking at understanding the game, understanding the situation, and trying to figure out what you need to do to be successful for the team on the offensive side. So last year we saw, you know, especially that it was so magnified, David, and you saw it, Mikey, too, that in the last 2 weeks of the season when the Cubs could not score, it was so magnified, the poor at-bats and the punch-outs with men in scoring position were, you know, against quality pitching. So that's the one thing that I'm going to look at to see if guys learn to move the runner along and stay in their zone maybe a little bit more for the young guys, not chase the high heater.
It seems as if a lot of the preseason prognostications have been kind of all over the board with the Cubs, and I think the reason for that might be the difference in the division. It seems like everybody kind of got better in the division, and we'll be anxious to see how that turns out. You know, when you don't make a ton of changes and everybody else improves, then your improvement has to come internally. There's still plenty of room for that to happen with this team.
You think about, just look back at all the issues the Cubs had that we've just talked about. You lost Darvish. You didn't have a closer for the second half of the season. Your other starting pitcher signee was non-existent the second half also. So you look at closer, two starters. You look at an offense that was really scuffling the second, let's say the last month of the season. All those issues, you still won 95 games. If things work out and Darvish is good and Morrow does pitch well, and then all of a sudden the offense figures it out and some of these young guys just do what they're capable of doing. Not supersede anything, you know, off the charts, but just do what they're capable of doing. Schwarber, App, Elmora. What are you looking at? 103 wins, 104 wins, 105 wins? Then you're the elite again. So I think this team is a 95 win team. They know how to win. Joe knows how to win. He knows how to put them in a good position. If they just do what they're capable of doing, not being a star, just capable, they're a 100-win team to me. That's what I see.
What player are you most curious to see this spring?
Darvish. I think he's the easy one, right? The Cubs pushed, as I said before, they pushed their chips in with Darvish and, you know, didn't get much return last year. So he's got to be successful. The other guy, if you look at position player-wise, the two guys, that really have a chance to take a major step forward this year for the Cubs and in the big leagues for them, Elmora and Ian Happ. I look at those two guys, and if they take a big step forward because they did well, then they took their lumps, and now it's their time to make the adjustment again. If they do, they could be really good players in the big leagues. I don't know about superstars, but really good players, and that would really help the Cubs. And they're really good people. That's the other thing that I really like about them, is they're really good guys. So you're waiting and hoping that they make that next step.
It's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine one year. The Bears played down in Champaign, and all their games were down there while the building was being rebuilt. And a friend of mine was saying, "Do you think that affected them? Do you think that affected?" And I said, "Well, I know it affected me. I was wrecked from doing that." I wonder, is the same thing true with all those games at the end of the season? You know, that unbelievable, whatever it was, 40 games in 40 days or 40 trips to the ballpark or whatever. You know, you say, oh, it's baseball and guys are used to that. But I would imagine that exhausted you, Ron. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. You're more than right. Let me just tell you that. My partner and I, you know, when we'd walk into the ballpark, Pat and I with our bag, and be like, damnation. If I feel like this, the hell do the players feel like? But it's the truth. And the thing that hasn't been talked about enough is that last month of the season. The last month of the season was hell for the players and you know, and the staff. I really believe that. And this is not a team that's going to score one or no runs the last 9 out of 10 games or 10 out of 12 or whatever the stat was. I don't have it in front of me. I have my breakfast in front of me. But, but I mean, if you look at that, that's not the team. So it definitely affected everybody. And that's just the way it is. And it wasn't talked about. And, it, you know, the Brewers had everything in their favor. They had an off day every Thursday for the month of September. Cubs had none for a month and a half, so it is what it is.
Ron, you say the Cubs are capable of winning 100 games, and I think that's if everything goes right. People understand that. Certainly, I don't think you're on speaking terms with Pecota. This has them winning 79,
I think, is the latest
projections.
Yeah.
Did they do enough in the offseason to your satisfaction? Because they were pretty quiet. They reinvested in the core. We all have discussed all the reasons why, but didn't you expect them at some point to maybe do a little bit more, be a little more active?
The only spot that if they were going to be more active, because you can't go out and get another starter, right? You re-up Hamill and pick up his option, so you knew Hamill was coming back. Other than that, I thought maybe bullpen arms, they might pick up one or two, and they kind of did. I thought they might go after more of a high-profile guy, but I don't scout all the other teams, so I don't see who they got and some of these guys that they picked up. I knew, though, going in, David, I knew going into this offseason it was going to be very quiet for the Cubs. It had to be. You can't keep doing what they did last year going into the season and dumping that kind of money in, and if you don't get return, you don't get return. That's the way it is. I just didn't see them making a lot of moves. I think they felt like they have a great team. They're a 95-win team. They just got to get on track a little bit better and win maybe two more games and beat out Milwaukee.
Ron, it's a pleasure and a joy always, and can't wait to hear you and Len and our guy Zach on the radio tomorrow. The Cubs game is at 1:55, so that'll be a joy.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. That extra month of off season, my batteries have been fully charged for quite a while. So I'm sure everybody's happy to get me out of the house and get me back to baseball because I'm going stir crazy here. So next time I talk to you, I'll be a little more tan, hopefully, and we'll have a couple games to talk about, boys.
Sounds great, Ron.
Hey, Ron.
Thanks a ton.
Welcome
Thanks,
back.
Guys. Cheers, buddy. Yep. That's great. That's Ron Coomer. Does a wonderful job. And again, the Cubs on the radio tomorrow at 1:55. How beautiful is that?
Oh, the games are starting. The analysis will continue, and it's good to have Coom back in the booth.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. We'll be back with your calls. Don't forget, we got Jim Callis coming up too before we get out of here. We got a lot left for you, Mully and Haw on the Score.
Is it safe to assume that John Lester's your opening day starter in Texas?
If I were to say that, then that means I have circumvented the other guys and not told them first exactly what I thought was going on. So is it?
So is that it?
Yes. I try not to reveal things via the press. I don't think I do that. I need to talk to the players about first.
Yeah, try it once.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, Sound Policy. to communicate with the players before the media. That's
what an idea. Yeah. Novel.
That's Joe Madden, and that's how Joe rolls.
Yeah, you know, a lot of laughter. We heard from Ron Coomer heading out to Arizona. Coom starts calling game tomorrow at 1:55. The Cubs' spring training season begins. 100 victory prediction. That's pretty bold. That's pretty optimistic. I don't know that I see them being a 100 victory team. I don't know that I see them being a 69 win team either, according to Dakota.
Are they down to 69?
Or not, I'm sorry, 79.
Yeah. That would be news.
Yeah.
If the algorithm turned on him that badly.
When you look at his rationale for predicting 100 victories, though, it's rooted in the starting rotation. And
Yu Darvish being good.
If Yu Darvish is as good as he was supposed to be last year,
I can see that.
It never goes that way, right? And I guess that's what you're...
What doesn't go that way?
You never get what you expect out of a guy when you're that optimistic. And a guy who was... I think being that optimistic about Yu Darvish is dangerous. I would not advise that necessarily. I think that's going to be... You know, you want him to return to form, but what is that anymore? When's the last time he was really good and consistent and healthy?
Well, he was awful, but he did pitch in the World Series a couple of years
ago. But that year was even limited by injury.
Right.
You know, that year was even... interrupted because of some concerns, health concerns. How many starts are you going to get out of him? When he says he wants to go to the mound, you know, 32, 33 times.
How long has he had to recover, David? I mean, didn't he have a year of recovery effectively? I mean, he did not. How many appearances did he have? He was a non-factor completely a year ago. And he had all these issues that were, I would like to think, and maybe this is just optimism. He lost confidence because he wasn't pitching well, that the mental issues we saw were a result of the physical problems. So if he's pitching better, then his mind will be right. Is that too optimistic?
No, I guess not. I guess he has done so little to maybe, you know, earn the benefit of the doubt in Chicago. Maybe that's not being fair, but I think that's just being realistic.
And he did have 31 starts in 2017.
Wow.
That's a lot. That's good. If he has 31 starts
second
this year,
most he ever had.
Yeah. If he has 31 starts, I don't think
he makes 31 starts for the Cubs this year, I think I'll be pleasantly surprised. Won't you be? Do you think he can make 31, 32 starts?
Yeah. I think he can make 30 starts. I would say, David, where does the expectation start with him? At 25? He's got to make 25 starts. So, yeah, I'll give him 30 starts. Why not?
If he makes 30 starts and everybody else in that rotation stays healthy, because I think he's the key to it, then this could be a pretty good rotation. And then, you know, approaching 100 victories is not out of the question. I don't think, you know, between 90 and 95 seems probably realistic for this team.
Yeah, I don't think the Cubs are as bad as they looked a year ago. I don't know that they're as good as they've looked in previous seasons, but I don't think they were. I think that a lot of things kind of had to go wrong for them to wind up where they were. And, you know, they won 95 games despite the former league MVP being as down and as, you know, he played hurt even when he wasn't out injured. So that's a huge part of it. To me, he's their best player. He's their generational talent. So if he gets back to that, the only guy that took a step forward a year ago was Baez. So the question is, can he maintain that level? And can other guys take that kind of a step forward? They still have enough younger players that you would expect them to do better. We are almost expecting a decline because some algorithm predicted it. And I mean, again, the other part of it, I think the rotation looks
good. I think part of it, though, is more than the algorithm. I think you're expecting a decline. It's also because of just the way the season ended. And it was just, it ended on such a downer. When you look at it doesn't feel like the numbers were representative of what we watched, because it does say that they won 95 games, and then everyone remembers September. They remember the last month, and it was such a slog.
Yeah.
And it was drudgery, and it was an offense that stopped working. So the first half of the season, you felt like, okay, you know, we can complain and we can gripe, but it sounded like complaints and gripes that were not necessarily all that fair all the time. But when you watch the way the Cubs ended their season, it doesn't feel like they're coming off a 95 victory year.
We were talking about it this morning. If you look at the schedule for the Cubs, all of the all of the games here that that they start the season with. And, you know, we're talking about having some, you know, series early in the year that in April you've got the Anaheim Angels coming in. You've got Arizona coming in. You've got the Dodgers coming in. Why not go there so you can actually get the games in and then play those teams at home later on? Doesn't that smack of rain out central? Doesn't that make you feel like, oh boy.
Snow out central.
And I get it. No one wants all their games front loaded and it's not fair to all these other teams, but there's snow outs there that you're going to be desperately trying to make up. The first month of the season, you have another five bad weather games, and what are you going to do?
It's hard to do consistency. It's hard to get a true representation of what you might have because of the conditions. And I think that you know we'll probably tend to overanalyze that in the coming weeks because so much is riding on the way the Cubs start their year. You know, so much is riding on a quick start. If they don't get off to a good start, you don't know where this is headed because there's as much emphasis this season on April and May as there was, you know, traditionally, as there is traditionally on September and October. Now, obviously, you win it all. You played in the playoffs in October. It's the postseason. But there may not be a team, this team, that is thinking postseason if they don't get off to a good start, in that there's urgency attached to Joe Maddon's tenure based on how they do in the first, you know, 50 games.
And Joe,
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Joe, I wonder if this is setting us up for failure, of setting the team up for failure. If the idea that there's this urgency early in the year, and if you're better earlier in the year, you know, David's right. The end of that year turned into an unbelievable slog. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be firing all your bullets early and then not building toward the conclusion of the season. It's, you know, and Dustin has predicted that Joe will be out. When was it? By March?
Not March, May 1st.
May 1.
Before the Kentucky Derby.
Okay. Boy,
that's anybody that is not into 2 out of 3 really needs to reevaluate their baseball sensibilities.
Hot.
Dustin, you kept talking while we were hearing Joe talk. So why don't you try that one last time?
He's not wearing his headphones.
He's not wearing headphones.
No, which is like, I think, day one lesson at IMS. Is it not, Dustino?
The whole chapter.
Actually,
on that.
Day one lesson is to not have pots up on the board that you're not using so that when you screw up with the new automated system, commercials don't go over the air and talk over Mully and Haw. That would be day one. That's day two, what I did. And you're right. I didn't have my headphones on, so I couldn't hear you.
Suddenly, this sounds like the post show meeting.
I didn't want to respond because I get.
That sounded a lot like, I know I'm bad, but you're worse.
That's exactly what it was.
We are a crack team. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I don't want to talk too much about them because you get excited about it, and then you think you want to jump the gun on everything that's going on as we're moving forward. But a very polished young man. I think he's got a tremendously bright future ahead of him. You know, knock on wood, we stay healthy and continue to see his development. And I imagine that at some point he's going to be a very impactful big league pitcher.
Radio 6-7 to The Score. That is Rick Renteria talking about Dylan Cease, who's going to be the next great thing after the current next great thing is coming back from injury. Let's get to Jim Callis is in Arizona. He's the senior writer for MLB Pipeline and a friend of the program. Jim, how are you?
Good morning, Jim.
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're all pumped up. You know, we've moved beyond this Manny Machado nonsense, and we're now plotting the championship core and how quickly those guys can arrive. And that's what we've been told anyway. You know, Jim, I lost some faith in the rebuild last year with the number of injuries, and certainly the Kopech one was very embittering. How is this commonplace? Did this happen to other teams? Is it not? Is it just sort of the usual type thing that happens when you're trying to bring up a whole group of guys at one time?
It is. I mean, you know, the thing to remember about prospects is, you know, and I'm guilty of this sometimes too. When you look at the teams that have great farm systems, it's real easy to look and say, okay, the big league team isn't good right now, but, you know, this guy's going to go here and that guy's going to go there and these three guys are going to join the pitching staff. And, you know, with prospects, they don't all pan out. They don't all arrive at the same time. that you think they might. Their development isn't linear. I mean, using the White Sox as an example, I mean, a couple of years ago, Yoan Moncada was the best prospect in baseball, and he's still young, and I still think there's a lot of things to like about Yoan Moncada, but obviously his first couple of years in the big leagues, it's not like he's taken it by storm and, you know, just dominated from day one. So it's just kind of the nature of the beast. I mean, that's why sometimes with prospects, I always caution people. I mean, kind of a rule of thumb for me is if you look at even a bad farm systems prospects or a good farm systems prospects, about a third of the guys will reach their ceiling like you think they can, and a third of the guys you think are good prospects might be good players, but maybe not the stars you think they can, and the other third are going to be disappointments. It's very rare that every player you're counting on is going to come through for you.
Jim, you wrote about the Cubs and their prospects in MLB.com yesterday, and I think Jason McLeod has been pretty open about the need to see some of these pitchers develop and start to, you know, produce some results. And you look at their draft in 2016, 13 of the top 14 picks, or their first 14 picks, were pitchers. And then the top five in 2017. Who are those guys maybe at the top of the list that the Cubs might start to see some results from, and how much can they count on given the fact that their opening day roster, as you point out, may not have a single homegrown arm?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, Jason and those guys, for all they've accomplished, they'll admit, look, like, we haven't gotten pitching done like we wanted. And they've had to go out and, they spent on John Lester, and that worked out pretty well. And they spent on Yu Darvish and Tyler Chatwood, and that didn't. And, as we all know, Cubs fans are a little up in arms because they've spent all this money on pitching that didn't work out, and Bryce Harper's sitting out there, and the Cubs aren't going to get involved with that. Talking to the Cubs, when you look especially at that draft a couple years ago where they took all those arms, and they were all college arms too, it looked like the Cubs were going for that, I don't know if safe's the right word, but more maybe polished college pitcher who threw strikes and had, good, not great stuff. And they're admitting that maybe they tried to, they're pitching, blueprint, that they've had to change it. They were kind of all looking for the same thing, and now they're realizing, hey, sometimes guys with bad deliveries, or less pure deliveries don't get hurt. Sometimes a guy who throws hard but doesn't throw strikes, you can polish him up. The scary thing still from a pitching standpoint, though, is, none of those guys, I mean, not that you're going to have guys in the big league necessarily, 2 years later, but that 2016 draft, none of those guys are top prospects. I mean, the best pitching prospects in the system right now are Braylon Marquez, who's a really hard-throwing lefty, who was part of the international class they had in 2015, but he's only been in low A, so he's still a couple years away. The guy who's probably their greatest hope for help this year is Adbert Alzolay. He's another part of the international program. I mean, he only signed for $10,000 back in 2012, and he probably would have been up last year, but he got hurt. He had a lat injury that he should be fine. And the third guy is Justin Steele, who was a high school pick in 2014. He was one of the three guys that they took, that they gave, 7-figure bonuses to out of high school after they saved some money by taking Kyle Schwarber in the first round. And Dylan Cease, who's now the White Sox, was another of them. But, all those pitchers they drafted recently, the best guys are probably guys like Corey Abbott and Keegan Thompson, who, maybe could be up toward the end of the year, but they don't have a lot of difference makers. And, even the guys they took first-round picks, they had two first-round picks in 2017, and this is an organization that has had a lot of success taking hitters in the first round, and they took Alex Lang and Brendan Little, and both those guys saw their stuff back up as they transferred, transitioned from college to pro ball. So they're still very much trying to figure out what they're going to do for pitching in the future.
We know on the south side that Eloy Jimenez probably will be up in mid-April after they make sure that they get the extra year from him, and I don't know if that's okay to say, but that's what's going to happen.
I'm curious to see what the excuse will be, because they can't come out and say that. And right. Vlad Guerrero Jr., you can say, he needs to work on his defense. I don't know what it was going to be. Like, it'll probably be something like, we'd like to see him strengthen his arm for a couple more weeks or something. Yeah, it'll be something ridiculous.
But how much of an impact will he have this year? I mean, I'm sitting here with a guy who thinks he's going to lead the White Sox in home runs.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him doing that. I mean,
thank you.
I've said this. I think Eloy, not necessarily in Chicago, is a little underappreciated by baseball fans, because everybody's focused on how great Vlad Guerrero Jr. is. And Vlad Guerrero Jr. is great, but Eloy is right there with him in terms of, you know, being able to hit for average and power. I mean, this guy has just raked for the last, you know, ever since he got to low class A, he's just unbelievably raked. I mean, they're going to screw him around and keep him down for a couple weeks. But if you told me he hit 300 this year with 25 or 30 homers, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Everybody's hyping Vlad Guerrero Jr. and deservedly so, but Eloy Jimenez could very well be Rookie of the Year. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, you go back and you look at the couple big trades the Cubs have made to get pitching, and they give up Gleyber Torres for Aroldis Chapman, wow. And nobody's going to complain about that to help them win a World Series. But I think people, you know, Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease getting traded for Quintana, that one, you know, if the Cubs don't win a World Series because of that, I think that's going to be regret. I think I actually wrote, I mean, we might look back on that, and that might be like Lou Brock for Ernie Broglio, you know, however many, you know, that was back in 64. I mean, that trade, if you don't win with Quintana, that one could really blow up in your face.
You're not wrong. I would agree with that. If they don't win with Quintana, that was the whole reason for getting him at the time they got him. Let's stay with the Sox for a second, Jim. Mankata moved to third base this week, getting a lot of action there. Looks like he might be the opening day third baseman, according to Rick Renteria. In the eyes of many people, Nick Madrigal is a guy on the way.
How quickly is he on the way?
Yeah, is it going to be this season?
Well, I don't think it'll necessarily be this season because unless the White Sox unexpectedly contend. And I will say the teams with great farm systems a lot of times will contend a year earlier than you think. It happened with the Cubs. It happened with the Astros. It happened with the Brewers. It happened with the Braves last year. It might happen with the Padres, although I don't know how unexpected it is. Now they got Machado. You know, Nick, I think, could be up, you know, probably early next year. I mean, we may be talking about the same service time manipulation with him. I think he's going to move very quickly. I think the big question with him, I think we talked about this last year when he was drafted. You know, the one thing that's a little difficult with Nick, I mean, he's a great hitter. I thought he was the best hitter in last year's draft. He can run. He can play defense. I think he's Gold Glove caliber at second base, you know, more so than shortstop, what I think he's going to be a second baseman for him. It's how much power is he going to hit for? Not that you need this guy to hit 20 home runs, but he came into pro ball last year and he hit 300 and he didn't really strike out. And he didn't drive the ball at all. Now, he could have been tired, and he had a wrist injury last year in college, so I'm kind of throwing that out the window a little bit. I mean, you can't have the guy, you know, hit 300, and then if he winds up, you know, hitting 300 and he doesn't walk much and he slugs 350, it's kind of disappointing. So I think he's got a little to prove this year, some things to work on, not to become a home run hitter, but just to be able to drive the ball a little bit more consistently at the pro level with wood bats. So I think he needs at least a full year in the minors. But I wouldn't be surprised. You know, they've been pretty aggressive with guys. If he opened the year in Double-A, and I don't know exactly what their plans are for him at this point, but that wouldn't surprise me at all. But he's probably a year away.
We've talked about Louis Robert as kind of the international man of mystery, a guy that's been down and out as much as he's been available. And the skill set's supposed to be awesome, but, he was not available when I was at camp last year. And what's with him? What is he? When?
Well, here's the good news. I'm kind of the same way what you just said. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, White Sox fans aren't going to want to hear this comparison, but, you know, he got the second biggest bonus ever internationally behind Yoan Moncada. And I kind of viewed him, you know, offensively as a very similar talent to Moncada. You know, he's a right-hander, but, you know, it's electric bat speed and there's a little bit of swing and miss in there. But with you, you know, like, look, the guy's always hurt. You never see him play. He didn't do a whole lot last year. When he did play, he played about 50 games, and he did not hit a home run. You know, he didn't do much at all. He was banged up, I think it was a thumb injury last year. It was knee and ankle in 2017. So when I went to the fall league, I was like, hey, you know, I can actually see Luis Robert play and confirm that he exists. So, of course, like his second game there, second or third game there, he pulls a hamstring and he misses a week. And I'll admit, I was kind of thinking, I was like, man, this is ridiculous. Like, you know, maybe this guy really doesn't exist and they're just making this up. Well, I got to see him play because I was down here for about 3 to 6 weeks. He came back after only missing a week. He looked great. Now, I mean, he has some things to work on. He needs to be more consistent. But, you know, when people talk about the electric bat speed, I don't think there was a guy, and I don't know, I'm saying this, I don't have the actual data. But I bet if you had exit velocities and sprint speeds, if you had Statcast data for everybody in the fall league, nobody had a better combination of hitting the ball hard and being able to run like Luis Robert. So he is real. The tools are real. To borrow a line from Seinfeld, they're real and spectacular. I'll be very curious to see what he does this year. But he, I will say, after being kind of cynical about, like, look, this guy hasn't played much and he hasn't done much, you know, just seeing him, you know, the raw tools in the fall league, it was really exciting. So I'm a believer. He just needs to stay healthy, and let's see what he could do this year.
Jim, back to the Cubs before we let you go. The top two prospects you list are Miguel Amaya, the catcher, and Nico Horner, the shortstop. Amaya was Darvish's catcher down in South Bend during those rehab stints last summer. What's the timetable for him, and how quickly can Horner get to the bigs?
You know, Amaya, I think it's probably a couple of years. I mean, he's only 19. You know, he'll turn 20 in a couple of weeks. You know, the thing that's exciting about him, the two things that are exciting about him are, one, you know, you mentioned they caught for Darvish, and that wasn't by accident. It, you know, this guy is super advanced for a young catcher. He's not, you know, he receives much better than you think a teenager would. He throws well. He needs to get stronger. But I think there's hitting ability in there, too. He already makes a lot of contact. I think he's going to, you know, you're potentially talking about a gold guy. You know, I'll go ahead and say it. I mean, he could possibly be a gold glove catcher. He's got that kind of upside, you know, and maybe hit 15 or 20 homers a year. So, you know, he's young. I'd say he's still, you know, probably 2-3 years away because he's so young. You know, Horner's a guy who's going to get there. You know, I mentioned before, the Cubs had a lot of success drafting hitters in the first round. And, you know, I think everybody in baseball, except maybe the Cubs, was light on Nico Horner because when they drafted him, you know, he played shortstop at Stanford. You know, he's probably, getting honest, to be more of a second baseman. You know, and he was known as one of the better hitters in the class. You know, kind of, to be honest, kind of like a shortstop version of Madrigal. Not a lot of power. I think he hit 3 homers in 3 years at Stanford. And it was kind of like, okay, he's a good little player. Well, he was in the fall league too. And I can't tell you the number of pro scouts who don't do the draft but just scout, you know, professional players for teams came up to me and were like, how'd this guy go 24th in the draft? Was it that good of a draft? Are there that many guys better than him? And the answer was no. I mean, he can hit. He's got really quick hands. He's stronger. I think the reason he only hit 3 homers at Stanford was kind of the style of hitting they coached there because he's got more power than that. I mean, I think you're looking at a guy who could be a 300 hitter, you know, 15, 20 homers a year. He runs well. Like I said, I think he's more second baseman than shortstop, but we know the Cubs like to kind of bounce guys around the infield. He's pretty versatile. I think he could play the outfield because he runs well enough. And the comp I got from a scout that I really liked, they compared him to Ian Kinsler. And I think he could be that type of player. So he's really, really good. And I think he's going to be kind of on that Madrigal timetable where I don't think they'll start him in Double-A this year. I think they'll probably start him in High A. But I think at some point in 2020, he'll be pushing for a job, and it'll be kind of interesting to see where they squeeze him into the infield. I think he's got a chance to be a better defender than Ian Happ at second. So if he's ready, and who knows what happens with Addison Russell, I mean, maybe you wind up with Javi Baez at short, and Nico Horner is your second baseman at some point next year.
Jim, we'll let you go. There's two pitchers on the Sox I had a question about. Alec Hanson, whatever happened to Alec Hanson? And
he got hurt, and he's always been up and down. Yeah. Nobody has any clue. He led the minors in strikeouts 2 years ago. When he's on, he can look like he's a number one starter, and there are days where he can't find the strike zone. So he's a mystery.
Yeah.
I would probably bet somewhere in the middle that he winds up being a hard throwing but erratic reliever in the long run.
Wow. And Dane Dunning is another guy that got hurt, but you know, I don't know how you project guys that everybody wants to look at the top end guys, and this guy just looks like he could find a way.
Yeah, he got overshadowed. One of my favorite subjects, I could talk for 20 minutes and I won't, is about how he's on a Florida staff where he wasn't good enough to make the weekend rotation because they had 5 first round picks and 9 guys who might be starting pitchers in the big leagues. But Dane keeps getting overshadowed. He was the third guy in that Adam Eaton trade, and I think he's going to be the best pitcher of the bunch. It's not unbelievable wow stuff, but it's 4 pretty solid pitches, and he of all the White Sox pitching prospects, he's the best pitcher. And his stuff's pretty good too. And the good news with him getting hurt was they rested him and he came back and he was pitching in instructional league. So it was some elbow tightness. As of now, he's fine. And I think he's going to be pretty good. I like Dane Dunning a lot. And I kind of agree. I think he gets overlooked because he doesn't throw 97 miles an hour. But it's 4 pretty good pitches and he knows how to use them.
Jim, thanks a ton. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good weekend.
You too. Great talking to you guys. Thanks.
That's Jim Callis, senior writer, MLB Pipeline. That's great.
Boy, he's got both sides of town. He's got it down.
He's got the whole. Yeah. I love talking to him about prospects. We're going to bring in Dan and Connor, and then we're going to get out here for the weekend. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.